I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Next month, the Maryland General Assembly will convene in a special session to draw boundaries for Maryland's 8 congressional districts based on the results of the 2020 census. The Legislative Redistricting Commission, appointed by Democratic leaders, has suggested no fewer than 4 possible maps. Another commission, formed by Republican Governor Larry Hogan, has suggested a map as well. Today on Midday, what new districts might end up looking like and what it could mean for the current congressional delegation and for the makeup of the House in the midterm elections that are less than a year away. Former Senator Jim Brochin is with an advocacy organization called Fair Maps Maryland. David Daly is a senior fellow at the national organization Fair Vote. Josh Kurtz is the founding editor of Maryland Matters. They join me after the news. And good afternoon. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you are along for the ride today. Every 10 years following a national census, congressional seats are reallocated and congressional district boundaries are redrawn to assure that each member of the House represents roughly the same number of constituents. As the population of the U.S. shifts, certain states will lose seats in the House while others will gain them. New York, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Illinois, West Virginia, and California will all lose a seat in the next Congress. Oregon, Colorado, Montana, Texas, Florida, and North Carolina will each gain a seat. The 2020 census showed that the state of Maryland grew by more than 400,000 people, although the city of Baltimore has lost 35,000 residents during the last 10 years. And with that population loss comes a loss of clout on Capitol Hill. Maryland will retain the 8-member House delegation it currently holds, and on December 6th, the General Assembly will meet in a special session to determine what voters those 8 districts will include. Last January, Republican Governor Larry Hogan appointed members to a commission called the Maryland Citizens Redistricting Commission. That body submitted proposed maps for congressional and state districts to the governor a week and a half ago. A separate commission, appointed in July by Maryland Senate President Bill Ferguson and House Speaker Adrian Jones, both Democrats, has released its own set of maps, including 4 different proposals for congressional districts. Today on Midday, where we are in the redistricting process, how we got here, and what we can expect moving forward. A little later, Dave Daly, a senior fellow at Fair Vote, and the author of 2 books about gerrymandering and redistricting, will recap the history of how the current Maryland congressional map was devised 10 years ago. Then we'll hear from Josh Kurtz. He's the founding editor of Maryland Matters, which covers all things legislative in Maryland. But we begin with former Maryland Senator Jim Brochin. Brochin is a Democrat who has teamed up with former Republican Howard County Executive Alan Kittleman to form Fair Maps Maryland, a group that advocates for the legislature to adopt the recommendations that Governor Hogan's commission has put forward. Fair Maps is being advised by Doug Mayer, a former communications strategist for the governor. And Jim Brochin joins us on the phone from Towson. Senator, it's been a minute. Welcome back.
Tom, how are you?
I'm doing okay. So what's the reason for your organization, Fair Maps? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, we hope to first of all, educate voters and expose them to what gerrymandering looks like in other maps, specifically the ones that the legislature put out, and then expose them to what the governor's done, which is put Democrats and Republicans together and actually put something together that didn't have any politicians' input. And I can tell you from my 16 years in the Senate and going through 2 redistrictings, both which hurt me, but the first one helped because the Court of Appeals stepped in and ended up drawing their own map. I've seen how it's done, and it's not pretty. It's in the back room. It's, grabbing certain legislators and saying, do you want this neighborhood or do you want that neighborhood? And there's apartments over there that have a lot of Democrats, so let's put that in. And I just don't think it's the way we should be doing it. And since I got in the Senate, I joined with the governor when he got elected, and I've joined with other politicians before then to try and do something fair. So Fair Maps Maryland was a perfect fit.
And what's been the process for the Maryland Citizens Commission? How were the people on this commission chosen, and was FairMaps involved in the creation of this commission at all?
No, the governor chose the commission before FairMaps was established, and the governor put his commission together. And you know, I think you know the layout of it. I think the Howard Community College president is on there. Judge Williams is on there. So I mean, he has a very good mix of people who really don't have a lot of political play or political power, and he's mixed it with Democrats and Republicans. And the best thing I can tell you about our map is Princeton University has done a study of maps across the country. They looked at the map that was put together by the governor's commission, and they gave it an A. They looked at the scenarios that the legislature put together, and they gave those maps an F. And Princeton University is, you know, not the Heritage Foundation. I mean, it's, you know, it's they're pretty fair. And you know, what you hope for, and what I hope for with FairMaps Maryland, is honestly that, you know, 50 other states will do the same thing. And I mean, candidly, Tom, you know, I hope we get 8 Democrats in Congress, and I hope that Andy Harris goes down. In fact, I considered running against him a couple of times. But there's a way to do it where politicians, you know, aren't picking their voters and really sulling the process.
Former Senator Jim Brochin is my guest. We're talking about the redistricting process here in Maryland. If you have a question for Senator Brochin, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. I'm Tom Hall, and this is Midday. So, Senator, what in your view then makes the proposal for maps submitted to the governor by the Maryland Citizens Commission superior to any of the 4 that the legislative redistricting commission has drafted so far?
I mean, I just think it goes. I think the whole answer to that, Tom, is the input process. I mean, who gave the input and who made the decisions? And you know, you really have to sit in the legislature and go through 2 redistricting processes, like I did, and watch people walking into the president's office. And I'm not saying it happened with President Ferguson, but, you know, his predecessor with Senator Miller's office, you know, the map laying out there and people, you know, and the senators coming in and picking and choosing what they want, and you know, and the input that the governor's commission did, which is people that just are not, that politics isn't their thing. And, you know, without getting into specifics, I mean, I think that's the whole thing right there. I mean, you know, I remember having a conversation after I won in 2002 in the Senate, and that's when they took Glenn Denning's map and threw it in the trash can and ended up drawing their own map. And about 6 months later, I had a conversation with the head of the Court of Appeals, who was, you know, Bob Bell at the time. And I said, can I ask you a question? I said, how long did it take you guys to put this together once you guys took it over? He looked at me, he said, we brought map experts in. He said, and they drew something. He said it took 45 minutes. And like, because people weren't trying to, you know, grab the voters, you know, that they needed so they could win the next election. So, I mean, I think that's the answer to your question, that the superiority is in the fact that we shouldn't be picking, you know, the politicians shouldn't be picking their next voters so they can grab the next election. Look, in 2014, my district went from York and Cranbrook to the Pennsylvania line. And I just got out and knocked. You know, and I did what I had to do. But it wasn't a fair process. It wasn't pretty. And when Glenn Denning did the map in 2002, he had Towson with Abington in Harford County. I mean, it was absurd that those 2 areas should be together. So, I mean, if you give politicians the opportunity, they're going to create a polarizing environment, which I think is really, you know, all you have to do is take a look at Capitol Hill. And the dysfunction there is the polarization of the parties. I mean, the far right is so out of touch and believing in things like the big lie, and the far left is, you know, they have policies that just are not in tune with Americans, and then they lose, you know, Virginia, and they can't understand why. And I think if you get politicians that are in the middle, you're going to get a much different story, and it starts with map drawing.
The commission, the Maryland Citizens Commission, as you mentioned, does include the president of Howard Community College, Kathleen Hetherington, Judge Williams, that's Alexander Williams. He's a retired federal judge and a highly respected conservative named Walter Olson, who's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. It's got nine people, and they're divided by party affiliation, including a few who don't have any party affiliation. They're registered independents, I guess. I wonder, a lot of people, including Governor Hogan, have been advocates for a completely independent commission to draw the districts. This is being done in other states around the country. I believe California has it, Colorado, some other places. And I wonder what, in your view, I mean, this is a little speculation that I'm asking you to make, but if there were, in fact, a completely independent commission, would it look much different from the one that the governor has proposed, put together, or would it look, for that matter, much different than the legislative body has put together? I mean, what would make any commission completely independent?
So it's a good question. I think the answer is this. I think it would look drastically different from what the legislature did, and I think it would look somewhat different from what the governor's put together. I mean, I clearly, in an independent commission, you probably wouldn't have somebody from the Cato Institute there, but you'd have retired federal judges, you would have presidents of community colleges, and you would have the basis for what the governor did, where you would get a very similar map. But an independent commission, I mean, what the president and the speaker put together, I mean, if you just take a look at the lopsidedness, I mean, the Democrats and the votes, of the Democrats on the commission just prevailed. So they can run, do they have Republicans on the commission? Absolutely. They have the Senate Minority Leader, Brian Simonero, who's a good friend of mine. But, like, when you sit down, and I've done it in committee, and you got the votes, you can do whatever you want. And there's this saying in Annapolis, our party, my party, would do egregious stuff. I'm like, why do we have to do that? And then leadership would look at me and they'd be like, because we can. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a good answer. So that's why it would look drastically different in an independent commission from what the legislature did, because they drew it the way they wanted. They knew that the minority, wasn't gonna vote for it. And they didn't care. It was just a window dressing that they put the minority legislators on, and they did what they wanted because they can. But the governor put people on there that, he felt were independent, and they drew a map that they got an A from Princeton University, and I don't think Princeton throws that many A's out to Republican governor's maps, and I think he'd be hard pressed to find something better. It's at FairMap. Our website is fairmapsmaryland.org, and you can get on that website if you want, your listeners, and look at it, and look what they've come up with. And God, it's a heck of a lot fairer than anything I've seen in 20 years, that's for sure.
And the Constitution of Maryland, as I understand it, does require the governor, to take the lead on redistricting, to hold hearings and have maps that he proposes to the legislature. So would an independent commission require a constitutional amendment and a change to the Constitution? I mean, and if an independent commission were agreed upon, and there's a whole lot of barriers to that happening, but in some utopian world where it was agreed upon, would the governor be involved at all? I mean, how do you have a completely non-political thing? The courts have said, Supreme Court has said, look, this is up to legislators. They're the ones who are the political legislative branch of government, not the courts. We're not going to decide districting, and we're not going to decide things on voting rights even. How do you have an independent commission that doesn't involve the legislative branch or the executive branch here in Maryland?
So another good question, and I think the answer is exactly what FairMaps Maryland strives for, and what I strive for as an ex legislator, which is this. I don't think you need a constitutional amendment. I think what you would force to happen is the governor would sit down with legislative leaders, and they would iron out the independent commission together, which is really what every citizen in the state should want. They'd come to a consensus, and that consensus would be led by the governor. And ultimately, wouldn't that be incredible? But right now, the legislature digs their heels in, because they're going to, because on December 6th, the governor is going to say, hey, here's the map. And the legislature is going to say, thank you very much, and throw it aside, bring their map out. I mean, December 6th is, I mean, don't expect anything dramatic. It's just going to, they're going to take the governor's map, toss it aside, and put their map in. But with your idea, yes, I think you could take an independent commission. I think you would force the governor and the legislature to work together with the members of that commission, and then let the governor take the lead, as it says in the Constitution, without changing the Constitution, without having a constitutional amendment, and having a commission that looks a heck of a lot more like the governor's commission than the legislature's. And the beauty of that is the governor would sit down at first and say, look, there aren't going to be politicians on there right now. And that would be, I would assume that would be Governor Hogan or any fair-minded governor's first step, because that's got to be essential. But no, I don't think you need a constitutional amendment for that.
Former Maryland Senator Jim Brochin, he's the co-chair of Fair Maps Maryland. That's an advocacy group which supports the redistricting recommendations of the Maryland Citizens Redistricting Commission. Senator, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Anytime.
We asked representatives from the Legislative Redistricting Commission to appear on today's program, and they declined. Coming up, looking back at the last time Maryland reconfigured its congressional districts, Dave Daly, he's a senior fellow at Fair Vote, and he will join me on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our show, Jason Green is an entrepreneur and former associate counsel to President Barack Obama. He's also the producer of a terrific documentary film that will air next week on MPT. It's called Finding Fellowship, and it chronicles the extraordinary story of three segregated churches in Gaithersburg that merged together in the 1960s. I'll speak with Jason about that film and the work he's doing with the company he founded called SkillSmart, which connects employers with job seekers to create diverse workforces. So Jason Green will join me tomorrow, along with theater critic J. Wynn Russick, who will review The Great Leap at the Roundhouse Theater in Bethesda. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about the politically charged process of redistricting. Joining me now is David Daly, a senior fellow at Fair Vote, a nonpartisan organization that advances voting reform. Dave Daly joins us on Zoom from Tacoma Park. Dave, how you doing?
I'm good, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. It's good to have you. So recap for us. How we got to where we are now. As recently as 2002, the delegation from Maryland was split between four Republicans and four Democrats. Then it went to 6-2, and it currently stands at 7-1. Bring us back 10 years ago when the current maps were formed. What happened back then?
Absolutely. And it's fascinating hearing the senator tell these stories. I think that is exactly right. When lawmakers get their hands on these maps, they are really, really happy to try to advantage their side any way that they can, because they can. And so you go back to the spring of 2011, you've got Governor Martin O'Malley. And once again, because the Maryland Constitution does give the governor the preeminent role in this process, you had the beginning of hearings happening, a commission appointed to advise, except all of this was an absolute charade, because the real power was going on behind the scenes. The Democratic members of Maryland's congressional delegation essentially tasked a man named Eric Haskins, who worked for a Beltway firm called NCEC, to draw themselves lines, and they gave him two goals. They said, lock us into really safe districts, and there's those two Republican districts left. See if you can get at least one of those to turn from red to blue. They called it the 7-1 map, and that is exactly what Haskins delivers. They took a look at the Andy Harris district off to the east, and they said, well, if we do that, we're going to have to draw lines that cross the Chesapeake Bay. Maybe not such a great idea. And then they looked west at the Roscoe Bartlett district, and they said, that's the one we're going to take. They shift Maryland 6th. They just turn that district inside out. Around Election Day 2010, that district had about 208,000 Republicans, 160,000 Democrats. It was a 47-36 Republican district. And by 2012, when they had redrawn those lines, you've got about 193,000 Democrats and 145,000 Republicans. The 10-term incumbent Bartlett goes down by about 20 points. That's not something you see very often. And Maryland's map has stayed at that frozen 7-1 number ever since.
Yeah, John Delaney beat Congressman Bartlett, who had been in Congress for 10 terms, beat him by some 75,000 votes. That seat is now held by David Trone. John Delaney left Congress to run for president unsuccessfully. In Maryland here, it's Democrats who are doing the gerrymandering and Democrats who control this process. But nationally, and you and I talked about this a few months ago, it really is a problem given the gerrymandered state of the electorate across the country. In a piece that you wrote for The Atlantic that explains much of what you've just explained to us, in 2012, Democrats running for Congress received 1.4 million more votes than Republicans, but Republicans still maintained a 33-seat majority in the House of Representatives. So the real-world effects here are serious. This notion of independent commissions, is it taking off? Is it gaining ground? Are people more receptive to it now than they were 10 years ago?
I think there's much more awareness of the problems of gerrymandering after we have lived through this last decade in which the lines that were drawn largely by Republicans, but here in Maryland, certainly by Democrats, that have really frozen our politics, introduced a lot of extremism, accelerated polarization, driven policy off, and really insulated politicians from voters. And so independent commissions have certainly been one of the popular methods of trying to rein in the most extreme partisan gerrymanders. The trouble is these commissions are really only as good as they are designed. I mean, certainly we've been watching in Maryland, we've been watching in Virginia as that commission has melted down under partisan pressure. We've been watching in Arizona as first Democrats and then Republicans kind of figured out how to hijack the commission by figuring out how to game the independent, quote unquote, independent chair. So it is very difficult to get the politics out of something as political as redistricting. A true independence here is very tough to come by. And one of the reasons I think that Maryland is going to be in the crosshairs this time around certainly is because Republicans have been so aggressive in the states where they have control of the process. We've been seeing this in Texas and Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, and New Hampshire, Utah, Oklahoma, in really maximizing their advantage and drawing competitive seats off the board. So I can imagine that Democrats here in Maryland are probably facing a lot of pressure to go after an 8-0 map and to pick up one of those red seats. After all, only 5 seats right now separate the two parties. That's the backdrop of all of this as we head into the all-important 2022 midterms. And politicians right. figured out that they can use redistricting to flip those seats.
And the last time it was Roscoe Bartlett in the 6th District that they targeted. This time, it's possible they will target Andy Harris, who's in the 1st District. He's got a very safe seat because the last time they did this, they basically crammed a lot of Republicans into that district. And if they change that, Harris's seat might be up for grabs for the first time in at least 10 years. Is there a downside if Democrats decide to do that? If Democrats, you know, succumb to the pressure that they may get nationally to keep Congress even. There's so many people who don't think the Democrats have much of a chance of holding on to the House in the 2022 midterms. Is there a downside for Maryland Democrats to try to make an 8-0 map? Again, a map that 20 years ago was 4-4 in terms of Republicans and Democrats.
Yes, I mean, it's awful public policy. These practices are egregious, and they are wrong, and they are anti-small d democratic. So the voters of Maryland are not 100% Democrats. You have a Republican governor in the state who's one of the most popular in the nation. The idea of an 8-0 congressional delegation here is absurd and does not reflect the will of the people. But you can also understand from the perspective of the Democratic Party, as they look at what's happening around the country, they say, well, we have no choice but to do this. I would suggest that Democrats actually do have a choice here, that they could use the time that they have with complete control of Washington, with the White House and both branches of Congress, to pass meaningful voting reform that puts a national ban on partisan gerrymandering. I don't think that this can be fixed state by state. This needs everybody jumping into the water together. Unilateral disarmament on a redistricting simply is not going to happen in a nation as polarized and deeply and closely divided.
Sure.
As we are.
Yeah, because Democrats' opposition to an independent commission was often premised in the fact that if they did that, they would only do it if New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Virginia and the contiguous states around Maryland did it as well to even up the map. And of course, that wasn't going to happen. David Daley is a senior fellow at Fair Vote. He's the author of 2 books on voting, including Unrigged: How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. Dave, thanks so much for your time, and we'll check in again soon, I'm sure.
Look forward to it.
We turn now to Josh Kurtz. He's the founding editor of Maryland Matters, an indispensable source for news about Maryland politics. Hey, Josh, welcome.
Thanks so much, Tom. Good to be with you.
Good to have you. We have some calls. We'll get to them right now. You can join us here on our conversation about redistricting in Maryland. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org to tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. Let's go to Ethan, who's calling from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Josh Kurtz.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, you've already started to make my point for me. Your first speaker, the senator, talked about Princeton giving an A grade to the bipartisan map here in Maryland and an F grade to the partisan map. I'm sure he's aware, and as are you, that all of these Republican-controlled states have F grades because the Republicans are doing everything they can to maximize their advantage. So it seems to me that we just don't really have a path forward here. You know, Dave Daley suggested national legislation, the federal government taking action on that. It's not going to happen. There hasn't been any movement on that. And at the state level, if Maryland was to adopt some sort of fair policy for drawing non-political fair maps, in effect, even though it's a good idea, and ideally we'd like all states to do that, in effect, it would just be giving a gift to the Republicans.
Yeah, well, thanks for the comment, Ethan. I appreciate it. And Josh, when it comes to the Democrats' opposition, even to the notion of an independent commission, assuming that such a commission could in fact be formed independently and act independently, what, in to your understanding, is the Democrats' opposition? Is it what Ethan is talking about, that it just simply accedes in the political arena in a way that Democrats are not willing to accede, or does it go further than that?
No, I think Ethan's point is well taken, Tom. You know, something you hear Maryland Democrats say regularly is, why should we unilaterally disarm if Republicans in other states are going to do it. And so, I mean, that's kind of just the sorry state of play. You know, they may realize that, you know, they're not occupying the moral high ground, but, you know, politics isn't a game where, you know, occupying the moral high ground often gets you anywhere. And so they'd much rather play this sort of hardball partisan politics.
I mean, it is true that I think voters are confused by the redistricting process and that they often really don't pay attention to it.
Right.
Perhaps part of the calculation on the part of the Democrats is that they may take a hit for a little while, but it will soon be forgotten. And then all of a sudden people are just used to what the congressional delegation is. Right now they're used to it being 7-1 and they could easily get used to it being 8-0. Given the efforts by Governor Hogan to make his commission, the Maryland Citizens Redistricting Commission, and again, this is as distinct from the Legislative Redistricting Commission, which was put together by President of the Senate Bill Ferguson and Adrian Jones, the House Speaker. You know, it's a 9-member commission. He's got a few from the red column, a few from the blue column, a few from the non-colored column, you know, independents. Is that the next best thing to an independent commission? When I asked Senator Brochin, you know, how would an independent commission differ? It didn't sound like he thought it would differ all that dramatically.
Well, I think that's one of the many arguments that Governor Hogan and his allies will put forward. And you know, it's worth pointing out that with the map that the Citizens Redistricting Commission put forward for congressional districts, the likeliest outcome would be 6 Democratic seats and 2 Republican seats. So not dramatically different from what we have now, not, you know, that's what we had from 2002 to 2012, but of course also different from 8-0, and with kind of the National Democratic imperative to pick off as many seats as they can ahead of what's looking like a tough election cycle for the Democrats. You know, there's no reason for the Democrats who control the legislature to go along with it.
Yeah, not good news for Nancy Pelosi, perhaps, but
right.
It wouldn't make that big a deal. It wouldn't be, you know, in terms of people advocating on behalf of Maryland citizens in Congress, it wouldn't perhaps be that dramatic. However, if you look at the one Republican that we have in the congressional delegation now, he is as far to the right as one can get. Andy
right.
Harris is not only a Trump Republican, but a vociferous supporter of the former president, a perpetrator of the big lie, a person who's now, you know, under investigation from a medical board about he's a physician. He's an anesthesiologist. He's prescribing ivermectin, a horse drug, to patients and stuff. I mean, he's as far to that side as you could get. So,
right.
Maryland citizens may say, "Well, look, you know, if the kind of Republicans we're going to elect are the ilk of Andy Harris, it really would be better to have an 8-0 map to guard against that, not just for Maryland, but for the state of the Republican general." What do you think?
Well, that's a good point, Tom, because, you know, you can argue about redistricting from kind of a 30,000-foot, almost academic level, which in a way, that's what the exercise of the Citizens Commission putting its map together has been. But then there's sort of the reality of politics. And, you know, it's worth pointing out that before Andy Harris was elected, the Eastern Shore was represented for one term by a moderate Democrat, Frank Cradival, and before that, for several terms, by a moderate Republican, Wayne Gilchrist. And it's entirely possible that if you polled the entire Eastern Shore, they would rather have a moderate representative. And I think if you even gave some Maryland Republican leaders a truth serum, they would say they'd rather have a moderate representing that district. But the reality is, the way the lines are drawn now, a far-right conservative like Andy Harris can win a primary and thus can beat just about any Democrat in a general election. And that's the way things have been there for a decade. And I think now that's one of the reasons why the debate isn't just sort of academically about do we do an 8-0 map, but, you know, some Democrats are thinking, can we take out this specific member of Congress, Andy Harris? And if so, how do we do it? So the debate is kind of happening on different planes.
Josh Kurtz is the founding editor of Maryland Matters. We'll have more with Josh on redistricting. And after a quick break, Jeannie in Hagerstown, stay on the line. We're going to get to you as soon as we come back. If you'd like to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWIPR. You can tweet me at @TomHallWIPR. Stay with us.
You're tuned to 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest is Josh Kurtz, the founding editor of Maryland Matters, a great website that covers all things legislative and state government. On December 6th, the General Assembly will convene in a special session to determine what the boundaries of congressional districts in Maryland will be for the next 10 years. You are welcome to join our conversation about redistricting, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle is @MiddayWIPR. Let's go to the phones to Jeannie, who's on the line from Hagerstown. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I want to agree with you and thank Mr. Kurtz and Maryland Matters for making it easier for voters to follow this complicated story. I live out in rural part of Washington County. I represent the local League of Women Voters, Washington County League, and I joined because I believe that informed voters are empowered voters. And while we've been fighting against partisan gerrymandering in Maryland and across the country, our local league has some concerns about what the Legislative Redistricting Advocacy Commission has done by producing four draft maps, while at the same time the Maryland Redistricting Commission, the Citizens Commission, got some really good scores from the Princeton Gerrymandering Project in 538. So we're wondering what the Legislative Commission is going to do, and we support them employing a transparent process.
Well, thank you, Jeannie, for that call, and thank you for your work with the League of Women Voters, a terrific organization that's been indispensable to democracy for generations. And Josh Kurtz, let me ask you to do something that's pretty much impossible, and that is tell us in a general way what's different about the four different proposals that the Legislative Redistricting Commission has put out for public comment. Do they differ dramatically? What do you think the outcomes might be? Are there any of those proposals, those four proposals, that would be more or less appealing, not only to Andy Harris, but to John Sarbanes or Kwasi Mfume or Dutch Ruppersberger, et cetera?
Right. Well, that's a lot to discuss, Tom. And also thanks to Jeannie for her work and for the shout out. The major difference between the four proposals that the legislature is looking through and the one that the Citizens Redistricting put together is really just the compactness of the districts. The thing that's notable, if you look at the Citizens Commission maps, is that they are just about as compact as can possibly be. I mean, Maryland is a funny shaped state, so you're always going to have some funky alignments, but theirs is really compact. The Maryland map for the last few decades, congressional map has had meandering districts that don't seem to make a lot of sense, except when you kind of look at it in the rawest political terms. And really, to one degree or another, all four of the ones that the legislature are looking at now still are like that. That said, two of the four proposals drag Congressman Harris's first district across the Bay Bridge and into Anne Arundel County, making them more competitive and less flat-out conservative and Republican. And the districts, you know, the four proposals kind of meander in different ways, cross county lines in different ways. What's noteworthy to me about the four congressional maps that are under consideration is most take the sitting members' top priorities into consideration. Congressman Steny Hoyer, the dean of the delegation, has always wanted College Park, the University of Maryland, and College Park in his district. He gets that in all four versions. Congressman Rupersberger wants Fort Meade in his district in Anne Arundel County, and he gets that in two of his four districts. Congressman Kwesi Mfume from the city of Baltimore wants as much territory from the city as possible, though inevitably his district is going to go out into suburban and maybe even rural areas. So there is definitely a lot of consideration given to the desires of the Democratic incumbents.
Mike in Baltimore sends us an email that says, Dems should gerrymander the hell out of whatever states they hold. Then maybe some algorithmic method of drawing up districts will be supported by both major parties. The high road never works. It's a bit of a cynical view from Mike, which I'm sure is shared by a number of our listeners. Jay is in Emmitsburg. He says nonpartisan redistricting will become feasible when Texas adopts it. Tom in Frederick says, isn't Maryland ceding even one seat in the House of Representatives, given the current environment of GOP denial of voting facts and denial that there was an insurrection in D.C., giving up on real democracy before structures of a true democracy are established? And then Les tweets, at what point does an 8-0 Maryland delegation instill a boost in turnout for Maryland Republicans in upcoming elections? And if so, will it matter? What do you think? I mean, would an 8-0 gerrymandered congressional map in Maryland, Josh, be an incentive, a motivator for Republican voters who are outnumbered 2-1 statewide?
I think to a degree it would, absolutely. And I think particularly the first election with a 8-0 map, which happens to be in 2022, which most political forecasters think is going to be a pretty good year nationally and even in Maryland for Republicans, you know, add that that's sort of another piece of fuel in the fire, and it would certainly motivate a bunch of Republican voters, I think. Maybe not enough to flip any particular congressional district. You know, the Democrats can draw them to be fairly safe, even with an 8-0 map for all of their candidates, but certainly then there could be implications up and down the ballot if angry Republicans are coming to the polls.
Do you personally, given the fact that you cover the state, you cover the legislature so closely, you know more about it than almost anybody else, do you think that's what the Democrats are going to do, that an 8-0 gerrymandered map is likely to pass when they meet in the special session in just 2.5 weeks?
I honestly don't know, Tom. I think it's really maybe at most a 50-50 proposition. I think there's a lot of internal debate about it. I think, you know, as your listeners will recall, the map from a decade ago was the object of federal lawsuits and went all the way to the Supreme Court. I think the Democrats would like to avoid lawsuits this time around too. So that becomes part of the consideration. It may be just as likely that they do a somewhat more compact 7-1 map that's a little less vulnerable to a lawsuit. They're weighing so many considerations as you know, you've discussed all hour, and as some of your listeners and tweeters have pointed out, that they're, you know, it's really hard to predict at the moment. I know there's a lot of pressure on them from Capitol Hill to try an 8-0 map, though.
Yeah, there certainly is. Let's go to David in Baltimore. He's on the line. David, welcome to Midday with Josh Kurtz.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Interesting discussion. Three aphorisms I think I believe in at this point. Number one, all politics is no longer local. Number two, extremism in defense of democracy and liberty is no vice, to quote a famous Republican. And the other thing is that, but I think this is a defining moment to preserve democracy and to do anything that helps Republicans sustain or gain more power is foolhardy. We've seen how they behave in Supreme Court justice, in voting rights laws, in sabotaging the Biden agenda at every turn. I think this is a moment to take over. Let's work out the problems over the next 10 years and the next redistricting, see if we can solve it.
All right. Thanks for that call, David. Josh, we have an interesting comment from Teresa, who emails from Reisterstown. Do you think there's any merit to the idea of using sub-watersheds as a basis for legislative district mapping? With climate change and bay health paramount issues, watersheds would provide meaningful groupings and achieve cohesive and compact goals, and they have actual geographic boundaries. It's the first time I've heard that idea adduced. That's interesting. What do you think?
That's an interesting point, Tom. And we should point out that in some of the redistricting hearings that have been held by both commissions over the last several months, there have been some people in Anne Arundel County who have testified that they really ought to be in a district with the Eastern Shore because they hold so many common issues with the Bay, you know, both worried about flooding and impacts of climate change, the issue of what to do with Bay Bridge traffic, and so that in that respect, it makes sense. So, people talk about contiguousness of land mass when you're drawing political maps, but watersheds are also part of that conversation too, for sure.
What about the city of Baltimore? Right now, the city of Baltimore, John Sarbanes has a chunk of it, Dutch Ruppersberger has a chunk of it, and Quaisi Mfume has a chunk of it. Quaisi Mfume represents the 7th District, which also includes Howard County and Baltimore County. There are some proposals that would have the city of Baltimore essentially be its own congressional district. So there would only be one member of the House representing the city as opposed to three. What would that do to the clout, the influence, the capacity of the congressional delegation to deliver for the state's largest city?
I think there's sort of two sides to that debate, because I think some jurisdictions like having, say the more the merrier, and the more people who are kind of paying attention to their issues and accountable to the voters there is a good thing. There are other jurisdictions. I know this is a frequent lament in Anne Arundel County, where I believe there may be three or four people whose districts touch the county who say, well, nobody's really paying attention because, they've all just got small chunks of the county. So the argument could go either way. I think those three incumbents, Sarbanes, Ruppersberger, and Mfume, would all like to keep pieces of the city. But the city is losing population, and that becomes a factor too as the population kind of shifts down to the DC suburbs and southern Maryland.
Yeah, we're down 6% according to the latest census in the last 10 years at some 36,000, I think, 35,000 residents. I mean, it's definitely a smaller place, under 600,000 now for the first time in a long time. I also want to just give folks a little bit of a mini primer on the rest of the redistricting process in our last 30 seconds here. The process for determining state districts, the state Senate districts and the delegates and all that stuff, that's different than the congressional districts. And when does that happen?
That's going to happen in the regular General Assembly session, which begins in mid-January. And they're going to have a very fast timetable, because the filing deadline for candidates for the 2022 election is, I believe, February 22nd. So they're going to have to move quickly on that front.
Yeah, because the law says it has to be sorted out so that people know what to run for. Josh right. Kurtz, the founding editor of Maryland Matters. Josh, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Jason Green joins me to talk about his film Finding Fellowship, which tells the amazing story of three segregated churches who chose to merge in 1968, months after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review a show called The Great Leap. That's at the Roundhouse Theater in Bethesda. Here and Now is up next now after the news, and The Daily Dose will drop tonight as well. Be sure to check that out. That's WYPR's podcast compendium of local news and the latest on our state's response to COVID-19. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.